Hello, everyone. You're listening to the RotoViz Best Ball Series. I am your host, Colm Kelly, and you can find me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. And today, I'm delighted to be joined on the show by TJ Hernandez from 444.com, who you can follow on Twitter quite simply at TJ Hernandez. TJ, we've done a lot of podcasts over the times together, but we're going to be talking specifically best ball today. So looking forward to getting into it. How have you been, my friend?
I've been good, just finally winding down the season a little bit. I know we still have Super Bowl this week, but obviously not really much fantasy left unless you're playing the one game slate on DraftKings. But good, man, just recovering from a long season. At this point, I just kind of feel like I'm coming out of a cave and seeing the sunlight for the first time all year.
Yeah, just it's been a crazy season, but I guess that's why we all do it and we all love it. And for the listeners who maybe they're living under a shell or living in a cave and they're coming out for the first time and they haven't heard of TJ for some unknown reason, TJ is also the co-host of the DFS MVP podcast with Chris Raybon, which is absolutely tremendous throughout the season, so make sure you check that out. Chris is also one of the guests here on the Best Ball series as we move through it, so you'll get to hear his thoughts on best ball as well. But a great team there, and really great content throughout the season. So when we move on to best ball and looking at it today on the show, we're going to focus on kind of pitfalls to avoid and basically what not to do when you're drafting your best ball lineups for this coming season. What I guess we'll give the perspective first to guys maybe who haven't played heading in for their first time. And you know, if you're used to redraft or you're used to dynasty, you're trying to have that roster where you can tinker with it all season long, change those players. What are some of the mistakes you think that those new guys coming in, you know, fresh off the boat into the best ball pool, what do you think the biggest mistakes they make are?
Yeah, I think probably one of the first things that that people need to understand, it's really hard to grasp in NFL in any format, really, because there's just so much week to week and season to season variance in fantasy football that it's really hard to get a grasp on who really has who's very strong and skilled at a particular game, who isn't, especially if you're not playing really high volume. And I think that starting out with just the format and the setup of this league can really throw new players for a loop. I mean, we have a winner take all strategy set up in a game that has 20 draft spots where you aren't really managing in season. So I think especially for those players that aren't playing really high volume, that just drafting just takes it requires more risk. You're looking to take down one prize out of a 12 team league. So you're going to need to kind of shoot for the stars, go for some ceiling a little bit more. Whereas in a redraft league, I think you could play it a little bit safer. You could, if you're good at managing the waiver wire, or if you've been in a league for a long time and kind of know the nuances of that league, know where you can make trades, know where teams or players are going to be over or undervalued, you could really take advantage of that. And in best ball, it's really just risk management if you're playing high volume, portfolio management. And another thing is just adjusting for ADP because of the setup, because people are taking multiple players at each position, even the onesie positions like defense, tight end, quarterback. There's going to be a big shift in ADP, especially in those middle rounds, just because where those second quarterbacks or second or third tight ends are being taken. Other leagues, they're not even being taken at all. So I think just getting a little bit of a grasp on those nuances, looking at past ADP, can really give newer players a big advantage over someone that's just kind of jumping into it blindly and not knowing what to expect.
Yeah, and when you look at it, you mentioned their roster management and, you know, the waiver wire and season-long leagues, and there's many, many cases in this past season. You'll have seen the teams really got off to a great start. Maybe they had Deshaun Watson or Will Fuller on their team, and then obviously Watson goes down injured. There's very quickly, if you lose out on quarterbacks or even at the running back position, you start to lose those studs. Very quickly, your team can really fall apart. So you mentioned, you know, there is no waiver wire. You're going to season-long with these guys. So it's a bit like playing DFS, except you have to do it kind of 15 weeks in advance or 20 weeks in advance and try and run it throughout the whole thing without having any injuries and having everyone hit their, you know, peak performances throughout it. Some of the kind of strengths that you would need to understand for the team and how to adjust for earlier picks, how have you found as you've kind of developed your strategy, do you tend to pay much attention to what other teams are doing? You know, you'll see somebody might have had taken two quarterbacks in those first 10 rounds, or maybe somebody has no quarterbacks after the first 10 rounds, and you're trying to decide when to make that next move and what position to go with maybe around those mid rounds.
Yeah, there's definitely some game theory and whatnot you could pay attention to looking at the runs of specific drafts. Like this kind of comes down to how many leagues I'm playing. If I'm tending to play, if I'm going to play high volume, if I'm just playing a few leagues and I see something like you mentioned, a couple quarterbacks going early or quarterbacks going significant early, obviously you have to adjust your strategy a little bit. Whereas if you're playing relatively high volume, you could kind of wait that run out, and that team might not be optimal for that specific draft, but what that's going to do, not adjusting your strategy, it's going to let you have a unique team or a couple players that you might not have across your entire player portfolio just because you're letting some of those values fall to you. And I think that's a really important aspect of best ball, and something that still gets overlooked that we'll probably come back to quite a few times in this podcast, because people get so hung up on those players they like, the roster construction they like, that they forget if you're playing a lot of lineups or playing a lot of teams, getting that value is really important. I think just by kind of building a portfolio of players that have fallen well past their ADP, whether it's a round for an early guy or two or three rounds for a mid-round guy, that can really add up to a lot of equity over the long term. So I think kind of just understanding the flow of the draft, understanding, like you said, player types, which we can get to shortly, is really important in how you're adjusting in drafts and really being flexible with whatever strategy you have going into it.
Yeah, and it's not something that we really want to admit, but sometimes those players that you don't really want on your roster can turn out to be some of the best decisions that didn't fall your way. Some listeners mightn't have played much best ball, might be trying to think about getting into it this year and what they should do when they're getting started. But you know, if you're coming from a redraft league and are ready to jump into this format of fantasy football, what do you think is the biggest differences from best ball compared to, you know, we'll just stick to season long for the easiest comparison to it based on that in-season management. Do you prioritize certain types of players, or how do you go about it from that angle?
Yeah, I think player type and roster construction are the two biggest things that people coming from redraft really need to understand. If you are looking at player types, high floor, high ceiling players are words that kind of get thrown around, but without much explanation. I think it's really important to understand what that means. I mean, if you have, I think it's kind of more important roster construction. If you come into a draft and you end up with some really, I don't know, a lot of running backs in your first couple rounds, just because that's how the draft falls, you're going to need to take some safer wide receivers in those coming rounds just to get that floor, and then wait much longer for some kind of flyer guys. Whereas if you have a more balanced lineup, you could take some riskier spots at the other positions because you have that floor. And also understanding the difference between a player, like a Jarvis Landry and I guess DeSean Jackson's the classic example, but understanding where that variance is going to come and how that's going to turn into points. If you have a team full of Jarvis Landry's, intuitively that might look nice. I mean, he did have a really nice ceiling this year, but that's just kind of the classic example. It might be hard for you to take down a winner-take-all league, whereas if you have a team full of DeSean Jacksons, that might look risky on the surface because they're risky players, but that team's going to have a really high ceiling, and with a lot of high-ceiling players on the same team, you're actually going to have a pretty decent floor because you have such a huge roster. So understanding those nuances and really understand what they mean to point allocation, I think, is really important.
Yeah, and you mentioned DeSean Jackson. I think every guest on the show so far has mentioned DeSean Jackson at some point.
Yeah.
So maybe we should change.
He's just that classic high ceiling example, and it didn't come to fruition this year. So maybe we need a new example. But people understand. Yeah. Ted Ginn's a good one.
So it's always. Getting that strategy, because at the end of the day, if you come 12th, you get the same prize as if you come third. You know, if you come second in some of them, you'll get a voucher to play next season's league, so you get a free entry. But really and truly, if you want to win, you have to come first. So unless you win, unless you have that high ceiling, you're not going to get the prize. And you mentioned, you know, Jarvis Landry, who is that safe floor player who's going to get you maybe, you know, those kind of 10 targets every week. But at the end of it all, if he finishes you in fourth place, that is not going to get the job done when you're playing in best ball. You know, you mentioned the draft kind of strategy is in terms of if you have a lot of running backs early, what you have to do later on in the draft with the wide receiver position and getting those safe floor guys. But do you tend to have any sort of strategy going in with, you know, mind to the popular ones, say zero wide receiver or zero running back, you know, maybe late quarterback? What's your kind of view? Have you a particular strategy going in, or is it just a case of whatever way the draft develops?
Yeah, this is one spot where I've actually kind of shifted back and forth over the years. There have been some big value opportunities if you've looked at the ebb and flow of drafts over the past couple of years. Last year, we saw a little bit of a shift back to running back, which in theory should have opened up some wide receiver opportunity, but we saw some of those top guys with some injuries and whatnot throughout the year. But kind of what I shifted to last year was more focusing on more of an early round diversification, just because, I mean, a lot of those, these first round picks are first round picks for a reason. And I think to load up on a certain position or a certain player in early rounds is probably doing yourself a little bit of a disservice. Obviously, if you didn't have someone like a Todd Gurley or DeAndre Hopkins, you're going to have a tough time having a great season. So people that were zeroed in on a specific strategy in the early rounds or a specific player in the early rounds can really kind of set you up, kind of put you behind the eight ball. Whereas if you look to diversify in those early rounds, then adjust your strategy based on what those early rounds gave you. That was much more how I was setting up my teams in terms of roster construction or positional allocation, and just kind of understanding what those early draft players meant to how I should approach the rest of my draft.
Yeah, and last season was particularly kind of a little bit different than normal. It really came down to, at the end of the season, if you picked in certain spots in those first two picks off the draft, that you really could have set yourself up so, so well. And we obviously couldn't know that prior to the time, and everyone thought they were making the best picks possible. But, you know, if you started off with David Johnson, or even if you started off with Ezekiel Elliott, who did miss those final games of the season but gave you the big weeks early on, there was just the diversification between injuries and high performance and low performance. You know, if you had Keenan Allen in there, DeAndre Hopkins, Todd Gurley, some of those later second round picks, if you picked, you know, Le'Veon Bell with those, it really set you up for the season. Was that something that you were fortunate enough to happen on any occasions? It didn't really fall my way this year.
I mean, it's kind of twofold, right? If you picked in those certain spots, and then if you had Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara, then yeah, that was kind of the combo you were looking for. But yeah, so I mean, I think you have to focus in on those things that you have control of. Obviously, if you had a lot of draft picks and at the one or two spot and ended up with a lot of David Johnson, probably didn't go so great. But at the same time, coming back around, if you had the one or two, there was a lot of times where you could get both Todd Gurley and DeAndre Hopkins at that 2-3 turn. So I think the bigger point is not looking at a draft or a season even and saying, oh, if I didn't have these three or four guys, then I wasn't going to profit. So it's just kind of bad luck. But I would argue that going into these leagues, not even just a single league, but going into your entire best ball season with a plan of how to properly diversify, which I probably didn't do very well to answer your question this season, is going to give you enough exposure to those guys to where if you're making good decisions between those players, even if you don't like them, you could still have a profitable season. Remember, you only have to win about 10% of your leagues to break even. So that's not particularly hard to do. And you should be landing on a couple of those players or avoiding a couple of those landmines if you are diversifying properly.
Yeah, and you mentioned there, you know, the strategy based on one season, and it can just be based on luck. I think it's a key point to make is when you're drafting, whether it's best ball, whether it's redraft, whether it's dynasty leagues, you need to have a kind of a plan over a sustained period of time to be able to check if your strategy is actually working. You can't just say, oh, 1 year it worked, so it's brilliant, and the second year it didn't work, so it's terrible. You kind of have to work it over a sample size and figure things out. Is that the way you would look at it too? Not just, you know, decide, oh, 2016 was great, 2017 was bad, and change your strategy. You need to stick with it long term, have little tweaks, but not major changes.
Yeah, not just that, but also just having a pulse on what the industry is doing. I mentioned in the last couple of years, it's went all the way to zero running back or back to zero wide receiver. Obviously, that's going to open some huge value opportunities, and you need to be able to take advantage of those. But again, just I think best ball is such a unique animal because not only does it come down to obviously player evaluation, but roster construction technique, which just isn't it's not a thought in redraft. Like, we're very constrained into how many players we're going to have at each position. Yes, some people might have a backup tight end, some people might have a backup quarterback, but there's a lot of flexibility in these best ball leagues, and I think people really need to go into it understanding those nuances. Are you going to have go into it having two or three quarterbacks or setting up these if then statements? Sure, I want two quarterbacks, but if I don't get one till this round and can't get two, say, I don't know, top 15 quarterbacks, I need to get a third quarterback. I think a lot of that is going to go back to strategy, and yeah, you're not going to have something specific that you do in every draft. You should be flexible, but maybe having a range or a very specific plan for diversification or hedging, which I think people are, myself included, probably now that I went back and looked, had time to look back at my teams, not just blindly diversifying. I think you have to go further than just saying, oh, I need 30% of each player and that's it.
Yep, no, I agree 100% with that. I just want to let the listeners know while we're running through the show here that you can still get yourself a 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass. It's available through the NFL podcast homepage, which is rotoviz.com/podcast. That subscription will give you unlimited access to all our NFL content and tools, and best of all, it helps support the pod. So be sure and get that 30% discount for that NFL pass at rotoviz.com/podcast. That will also take you through all the way through the 2018 season. So pretty much an entire year of rotoviz.com content, which I really can't recommend enough to all the listeners. So go check that out if you haven't already availed of the discount. I also want to tell you about mybookie.ag. They are the number one rated online sportsbook, and they are the official sportsbook of RotoViz Radio. The fantasy season is over, but there is no need for your NFL knowledge and your sporting knowledge to not be able to cash you in and win some prizes. Of course, mybookie.ag can help you with that. There's odds on pretty much everything this weekend, great live betting options, and an all-new prop builder. You can pretty much create your own bet slips no matter what you want. Think something's going to happen in the game this weekend, put that down in mybookie.ag and you can get a line on it. So have some fun with what your predictions are. Put your money where your mouth is. If you sign up with the code RVRadio, they will match your first deposit with up to a 50% bonus. So as simple as that, 50% for just signing up using our code RVRadio. They have been with us throughout the season. They're with us again for the Super Bowl. The official sportsbook, as I mentioned, off RotoViz Radio. And quick payouts, no hassle, easy. Get your money on, get your win, and then just keep going from there. It is mybookie.ag, the promo code again, RVRadio. Back to best ball once again. Now that, you know, you mentioned that you got to go back and look at your teams and what happened throughout the season, now we know the outcomes. Who are some of your highest owned players and why? And I see the list in front of me, and the first name here on the list it hits close to home.
Yeah, when I tell you my highest owned players are probably going to think there's no way I was profitable this year, but somehow I squeaked out a little bit in the black. But the players that I was really going after this year were Spencer Ware, DeAndre Washington, and Andy Dalton. And Spencer Ware was really the only, I think, where he was probably going around 4 or 5. I just like the setup for Kansas City running backs in that offense. Obviously, that take worked out, just not with the player we were hoping for. And then one thing, I mean, if you look at DeAndre Washington and Andy Dalton, I like the spots they were in, but a general takeaway that I would say from looking at the short list is that two of my three highest owned guys were very, very late. So the risk of having these highest owned players is relatively low, and you can recover from that. And I think that is one strategy aspect that people should be paying attention to. Those players that you're really going all in on are 50, 60% ownership. Those guys should be very late picks, because if they don't hit, the leverage of those picks is very low. If you turn that around, we talked about David Johnson this year. I mean, obviously that's going to depend on your draft slot, but if you never diversified between him and Le'Veon Bell when you had the chance, and went all in on David Johnson, you probably didn't have a very good year.
Yeah, it's pretty much what equity you're taking them at, whether it's the first round or the 20th round. There's a huge difference there if they don't hit for you. And, you know, you mentioned Spencer Ware. At the time of his injury, he was my highest owned player at that point in time. And if you can guess who my highest owned player come the end of draft season was, I'll pretty much give you $1 million. It's a backup running back in the NFL. I'll just give you one opportunity to guess there, TJ.
A backup running back in the NFL. Oh man, I'm trying to think. That's so long ago. Who's the pass catcher running back for Seattle that everyone was so high on going into the season?
Procise?
Yeah, was it Procise?
No, it wasn't, and it actually fits in very well with you being on the show. It was actually TJ Yeldon. So
okay.
So it was just prior to the draft, I was taking the opportunity there, and then obviously fell pretty much to undraftable after Fournette went in there. I was getting him in the kind of 20th round, and I just was every time just clicking on it. Let's see how it works. Let's see how it works. And obviously it worked out for Fournette owners. It did not work out for myself and TJ Yeldon.
I'm glad you, that's actually really interesting. I'm glad you brought that up, and it wasn't a point that I planned to hit on or didn't hit on when you talked about what newer players should expect or be thinking about. But one thing that I think that people are really intimidated by when they get into best ball, or they just kind of brush to the side, is these things start so early, and the knee-jerk reaction is, that's dumb. Why would I be drafting a fantasy football team in March? There's a ton of opportunity there. One of the biggest things in fantasy is a fear of the unknown. And when we have, I'm going to touch on this a little bit later, these rookies that we don't know how to evaluate, or we don't know where they're going to land, you could literally just throw darts at some of these guys that we know are going to be relatively high picks, but we don't know how high. You're getting these guys in the 17th, 18th, 19th round. By the end of draft season, they're being taken in the 5th, 6th, 7th round. So, I mean, a lot of times it doesn't work out, but when it does, that's a huge value opportunity. So, yeah, you said Fournette fell into the mix, doesn't work out, but if you're starting early, you're going to get the flip side of that a lot too.
Yeah, it works both ways, and it has in many seasons. You know, sometimes you're picking those guys and you stick with them throughout the process, then there's an injury, they're the starting running back, and it works from there. You know, Giovanni Bernard a couple of seasons ago was that way, and it's just those pass catching running backs, you always take the opportunity on them. And, you know, when Fournette was out this season, a couple of games that Yeldon had big, big days. There was a big game against the Colts, and he actually, when Fournette was out in the playoffs against the Patriots, he had a really kind of nice performance there. So that'll probably hype me up again heading into next season. We'll see what happens. I think he is a free agent this season, off season, so we'll see if he can snatch on anywhere else. We'll see what happens with TJ Yeldon on our TJ watch here on the podcast. But from a strategy perspective, are there any areas that you think the best ball community at large are overemphasizing? You know, you touched on roster construction techniques and, you know, some of the different attributes around there, and having a pulse on the industry and where people are going, you know, with the draft strategy of the popular one, and it is going to be popular this next coming season, running backs all the way in that first round pretty much, I think is what we're going to see. And then obviously player talent, and I mentioned there at the running back position. What do you think that maybe the community is overemphasizing?
Yeah, in the last, especially last year, but the last year or two, one thing that we've really seen driving content, and I've written a lot about this myself, is that roster construction strategy, and really specific roster construction strategies. So for those that aren't super familiar with best ball, I mean, a roster construction strategy would be something like if you take two quarterbacks, four running backs, 10 wide receivers, two tight ends, two defenses. I'm just throwing a number out there, but that's what we're talking about. And really getting an idea of how profitable each of those specific strategies are. It's a really good exercise, but also I think when we see those winning percentages or win rates, I think a lot of people get caught up and say, okay, I need exactly 7 wide receivers. I can never have more than 5 running backs, but I don't want, that's definitely not overemphasized. I think maybe more misunderstood, especially from novice players, where more importantly, you have to have these range of players at each position that you want to stay within, and being able to adjust. And talking about specifically the running back position, like you mentioned, I think we've heard so much about the resurgence of the running back position. And I think when people hear that, they really tend to focus on these players being taken in the first 2 to 3 rounds where they think they're going to be the 300 touchbacks, but what gets forgotten a little bit is the position as a whole, and not just looking at player talent but player opportunity. These backup value running backs are so important to taking down leagues, and a lot of times, at least in my experience, it's a little nerve-wracking to take some of these players because we don't have an indication early in the year. We can't adjust in best ball. So if you're taking someone like a Kareem Hunt or an Alvin Kamara, maybe you don't get that production in week one or two, and it looks like a bad pick. But that opportunity is huge, and I think people need to not forget about those running back committees, because ultimately the league is shifting that way, and I don't think focusing on just those top guys is the way to leverage that situation if you do think running back is coming back.
Yeah, and one of my favorite things about best ball, and it's similar to why I like dynasty league so much, is you need to be looking when you're playing them in February and March at the, you know, what's happening with the team cap implications. You know, if a player might get cut at some point, what's going to happen then later in the preseason? You need to be paying attention to all those beat writers and the beat reports. You really need to know the entire roster, and sometimes, as you mentioned, those backup running backs are the ones that come on to be league winners, and you really need to know, is it worth taking the shot on them and justifying what your kind of angle on that is. You also mentioned, you know, we talked earlier about the strategy of, I need the first pick or the second pick based on what happened in last year's draft, the success rate of that, based on what you're saying as well with, I need 3 quarterbacks, I need 3 defenses, I need 7 running backs, and trying to fit that in. Those certain strategies are highly profitable, but the other thing is that there's people with those strategies in those leagues. You could have 12 teams, or say 11 teams with that strategy, and one team with a different strategy, and sometimes then the team with the different strategy will win. It's not just that clear cut, so we have to work through the technique of roster construction from that angle. Don't just jump aboard the train and don't do your research into it. Make sure you know what you're doing from that angle. Then a disappointing subject, I think we're going to touch on here, the biggest miss of 2017 in best ball for you. It kind of relates to your highest owned player.
Yeah, so I was really high on Spencer Ware, and I didn't have nearly enough Kareem Hunt. He just wasn't a player that I particularly thought was going to jump Spencer Ware. Obviously, Spencer Ware's injury had a lot to do with that, but and kind of looking back at the season, I think even if Spencer Ware never got hurt, Kareem Hunt probably would have ended up carving himself out a pretty big role in that offense. But again, I think when we're looking at these misses or even hits throughout the season or from the season, we want to be able to take some kind of lesson from it. We don't want to just say we missed on this player, and player evaluation is one part of that. But I also think, I already mentioned it, running back, it's about opportunity. And when it comes down to best ball, I think it comes more down to hedging and diversification. And I kind of briefly touched on the idea that I think people go about diversification wrong. I think they look at an app like the best ball app on RotoViz and say, okay, I have this percentage of this player, I don't want any more, that's fine. But really, we should be thinking about in terms of hedging and team and portfolio. So let's just take this example. Spencer Ware, I think I ended up with something like 35 to 40% of Spencer Ware. It might have been a little bit lower, but that's still pretty high for a top, I don't know, 4-round pick. Kareem Hunt, even if I say you play 40 teams, even if I only have 10% of him, that's 4 teams. If those teams are my winners, I'm already pretty much breaking even, and that's not that many relative to my Spencer Ware shares. And kind of to build on that, I think one way people go about this wrong, especially those that are coming from a redraft background, is I'm not taking them as handcuffs. You should be diversifying across your teams, not within your team. So it gives you a very strong portfolio, also maximizes the ceiling of your portfolio. So except for an extreme case like Mark Ingram and Alvin Kamara, who both were huge this year, usually these teammates aren't going to blow up together. I mean, some wide receiver combos, yes, some stacking combos, but if we're just talking about within a backfield, maybe if you're going to hedge on a guy you're high on, look to hedge on different teams. And I think that's a really small nuance that sometimes gets overlooked or not even discussed.
Yeah, and so kind of what you're saying is, rather than having a handcuff on a team and having the two running backs on the one roster, is having a running back on two separate rosters and having one of the teams have that opportunity moving into the season. It's a very interesting way to look at it. When we're looking back at the community at large, is there anything you think that we should all be paying a little bit more attention to?
Yeah, I think we should really start reevaluating our takes on rookies. I mean, we saw a couple of the best players in the league this year were Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara. I know people are always quite hesitant on rookie wide receivers, and for good reason, but especially because a lot of them don't come on till later in the year if they do come on. But I think probably we need to be looking for those value rookies a little bit more. Again, the fear of the unknown from the fantasy community, and this goes back to maybe a good reason to get into best ball earlier in the year, that value for these rookies, I think, is a little bit understated. I've been a big anti-rookie proponent for quite some time, but I think that's a shift that I need to make a little bit. I think probably just from a league level, it's a little bit easier for these guys to come into the league and make an impact. Rules have shifted towards making it easier on offense. That obviously is going to have a huge impact for fantasy. And again, I touched on it earlier, looking at those running back committees, looking for the value in that. It's not a new topic, but I think it's something that definitely gets forgotten because everybody wants those Kareem Hunts, those Alvin Kamaras, the Le'Veon Bells, the guys that are going to blow the field out of the water. But those running backs that are getting you consistent points as a committee are really important. And then building best ball teams that, again, focus on value, having some kind of system where you are always being you always have some kind of indicator when a player is falling beyond his ADP. This is especially important for people that are playing relatively high volume. If you're playing 30 plus leagues and you are continually pounding that value when it shows up instead of just taking your favorite players every time, I think that's going to be a very profitable strategy.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of good points being hit in there. So hopefully the listeners are really enjoying as TJ continues to really put out some good advice here as we run through it. One thing I want to ask you is, you know, the popular question for people starting out is how much should you worry about your exposure to specific players? You mentioned already, you know, Spencer Ware having a kind of 35% ownership for you last year. Do you think that starting out, if you're playing, even if you're only playing in 10 leagues starting out this year, do you think these guys should be worrying more about specific players and their exposure to them?
I think probably more than a specific player, save maybe some really extreme examples that are maybe very high risk or very low risk. I think rather than specific player exposure, I think owners should go into the draft having a plan kind of based on the equity of those picks. So obviously I kind of touched on it earlier, those first 1 to 3 rounds, I'm going to have more of a even exposure, or maybe I'm not taking more than 25% of any player in the first few rounds, but also maybe not less than, I don't know, 10% or something like that, or 15%. When you get to those middle rounds, you could expand that out a little bit, maybe still not more than less than 10% of those players that you absolutely hate, but you know, maybe bumping that up to something like 35% or 40% of these players that aren't quite as expensive, but still pretty high leverage. And then getting into these later rounds, I mentioned like the DeAndre Washingtons and the Andy Daltons. If you're at 50 or 60% of those guys, it's still not going to cost you that much if they hit. Maybe more so if you're really going in on a quarterback and just have a lot of two quarterback teams. And then there's just going to be late round guys that you just aren't able. There's so many late round guys, so many more opportunities in those really late rounds. You're just not going to be able to fit all of those players on your team without just kind of blindly throwing darts. So the range of your exposures in those later rounds is going to be a lot wider. There's going to be players that you have zero exposure to. And sometimes that's going to really kill you, but that's just another reason to not just play a lot of leagues, but be playing leagues throughout the entire draft season, because those values do fluctuate a lot.
And I asked you a couple of questions obviously about your worst call, and obviously we had Spencer Ware being the highest owned player, so I'm going to be a little bit nicer to you now. What was your best call of the 2017 season?
Yeah, probably this is one of the plays that kept me afloat despite some of those bad calls. But I was really high on Mark Ingram. If we look at those first 5 rounds, right behind Spencer Ware, Mark Ingram was the guy that I had the most of. And that was probably more me being down on Adrian Peterson than being high on Mark Ingram. And it was just a player that we've seen not need to command ridiculously high volume to produce. And I mean, his touch rates pretty much stayed on par with what we've seen with him in this offense, and that was something I expected to continue. So again, just having enough diversification, kind of trusting my read, not going all in. Obviously, if I go all in, that looks a little bit better, but that diversification, not having a ton of Mark Ingram, did allow me to get Kamara in some spots where I probably wasn't really too excited about him, just because I didn't know much about how this was going to shake out. But Ingram was the one spot where I was pretty confident going into the year, and I think probably that ended up being a minority take if we go all the way back to July or August.
Yeah, no, it certainly was at that stage of the season. Suppose you find yourself a time machine somewhere and you decided to head back in time prior to ever playing in any basketball leagues. What's the best piece of advice you would give yourself as a non-basketball player at that stage?
Yeah, I think like we touched on all the way at the top of the show, is really understanding the format, understanding the impact of having 20 rounds, not having any in-season management, what that's going to mean for how you approach player types, how you change your later picks based on the earlier rounds, not just taking the best player, your favorite player at each spot, and also just kind of having a plan. I mean, if you're going to play 5 or 10 leagues. Yeah, maybe you are going to have, you're going to change your strategy up and really go all in on a couple players, try to profit just because there's going to be so much variance. Whereas if you're playing something like 30 to 40 leagues, you can really kind of zero in on how you're going to diversify a little bit more, be more meticulous with your player portfolio, do some more interesting things with those roster construction techniques that we talked about, get really subtle with how many teams have 7 running backs versus how many teams have 6. And then if you are playing that high volume, just keeping track and having a plan, just having something set up where you know exactly what you're doing in each draft, how each draft shakes out. So all of a sudden you don't end up with 40 drafts, but every single draft has 6 running backs. And not that you can't win that way, but probably it might not be optimal just to keep one strategy and not adjust.
Yeah, and another question I have for you is maybe somebody out there had more TJ Yeldon shares than I had. Maybe they had that Spencer Ware shares amplified as well. Maybe somebody wasn't very successful in what they did last season, but now when they're looking at the best ball season, they're thinking about taking a little bit more serious. We've seen people over the years, really dive into it, have over 100 leagues, 150 leagues, 200 leagues, all the way up. There were some guys last year, hitting close to those 1,000 leagues. So when you have a lot of people doing it like that, and then you're trying to compete with them, trying to get a little bit more serious, what's the best way a person can really improve and amplify their best ball performance over the next couple of weeks?
Well, first of all, I would say don't be intimidated by the people playing extremely high volume. Yeah. Unlike DFS, people aren't getting immediate results on these best ball leagues. And also, you can just kind of throw $10 at a time at it. So I think more so in best ball than DFS, high volume doesn't necessarily equate to skill level. So I definitely wouldn't be intimidated by that. And then the first question I would ask someone that just started last year, maybe thought they didn't do good or thought they did really well, is how much volume did they play? Again, if you're only playing 10 leagues, you could easily win 3 or 4 leagues, think you're doing very well, not win any, and think you're a really poor player. Kind of that cutoff mark for me is about 30 leagues. That's where you should start seeing kind of a even sample of random results, and that's where they could kind of start to level out. And that's also assuming that you stayed within your buy-in range. That's something we didn't touch on. But if your buy-ins are all over the place and you only won your $10 leagues and lost all your $50 leagues, your results aren't going to look very good. So I'll definitely tell people to go back and see that. Did you just play one buy-in? And then go and look at those teams that did win. Is there something that you saw that was constant? Go back previous years. Was there a big shift in something that happened this year? Like this year, Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara were the popular players we've touched on quite a bit. That doesn't mean you should just be pounding rookie running backs next year. Is it because of the team or the offense they're in? Just looking for those trends. And the easiest way to do that is just consume as much content as possible. There's multiple people, Mike Beers, Josh ADHD, putting out amazing content on best ball that can really streamline this process of trying to figure out what the hell's going on at Best Ball. There's just so much out there. And after you've done all that, I would say just kind of looking at your strategy, really figuring out those onesie positions, those running back and wide receiver positions, those are going to vary a lot. But I would say zero in on, if you're brand new, zero in on quarterbacks, tight ends, defenses, and figure out how that really impacts what you're doing, because that's the easiest one to figure out, and it can really drive your success. I mean, if there's one obvious thing that stood out to me over the years, is if you're loading up on those positions too much, you're just not giving your team enough of a ceiling to succeed. And I think probably this is a whole podcast on its own, but that really comes down to giving yourself an opportunity to maximize that flex position. If you have six positions allocated to quarterback and defense, probably going to be pretty hard to do that. So did you have a good strategy but end up with too many of those positions that couldn't contribute elsewhere? I would go back and check those things out for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned ADHD and beers and the work they do. The Mike was on, I think it was 2 weeks ago's show, and then we have Josh. I'm recording with him next week, so we'll have that coming up in the near future. So lots of good strategy talk with them as well. So make sure, if you've enjoyed this one, to check those ones out as well. You touched there kind of on bankroll. You know, if you're in $10 leagues and $25 leagues, it's always a very important thing to kind of prioritize heading into it. I know some people will say, well, I kind of just have a strategy of playing in a certain amount of leagues, but you do need to just have, you know, a little bit of a look ahead. You don't want to be all of a sudden that you're in $10, $25 leagues and your budget for the season was $150, you're $100 over budget when it gets to March and you want to draft all the way through the summer. So make sure you just keep a close eye on that. So is that something that you prioritize ahead of time? And then the other thing, I guess I'll ask you, how is your planned approach going for 2018? Or are we going to wait a couple of weeks before you really start to think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I more so try to figure out my plan, not so much on bankroll, but on time management. So So, I mean, if my goal is 50, I'll try to say, how can I spread that out without, I never really want to have more than five going at the same time. I'm not the highest volume player, obviously, but I'm also playing enough where it's pretty significant. So this year's going to be interesting because Best Ball is moving. It's not going to be on the MFL platform anymore. So we have FanBall and Draft. So I think probably what my approach is going to be this year is to look at those formats, try to figure out exactly how much volume and where I want my money to be spent the most. So I think there might be a profit opportunity here, just because I think there might be some players that shy away from it because it's moving to a different format. But we also might get a influx of players, especially on Draft, where they're running a lot of different game types and some DFS and snake draft type games. There could be opportunity for a lot of new players that weren't playing before. So early in the year, I'm just kind of going to poke around on both of those sites and figure out what the best approach is. And then again, just getting into these player evaluations, I haven't looked at one player coming into the 2018 draft class yet. So that's my big process over the next couple of weeks. But this year I'm going to be diving in a little bit earlier than usual. I always start around April, June. This year I'm probably going to be starting as soon as they kick off.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you. It's just kind of always the week after the Super Bowl when I start to look at those prospects, and I tend to stay away. I don't watch any college football, so that's my kind of first exposure, and then I start to really dive into it. You mentioned that I'm going to start a little bit earlier too, because there's a baby on the way in April, so that's going to take away from some of that time of figuring things out. So I'll have to start looking into it, I think, over the next couple of weeks. Do a little deep dive, then get that out of the way, and then start to work towards it again after that. So it's been fantastic, TJ, having you on. It's always a pleasure talking to you every time you have you on. The listeners should already be following you, but if they are not, they can find you at TJ Hernandez. As always, TJ, it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Everybody, once Super Bowl's over, take a break from football, man. We need to breathe a little bit.
I think we definitely do. We need a couple of weeks just to relax and take that deep intake of breath. But that's going to do it for today's edition of the RotoViz Best Ball Series. I'm Colm Kelly. You can find me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. Thanks very much for listening in, and until we're back with another show, have a good one. Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Best Ball Series. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.